Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. None of us will ever forget this day. Yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Thank you.
This is Tim with Leading with Sense. In one of my last episodes, I covered Money Marching Order number one, which included life insurance and the need for life insurance. One of the most hazardous parts of the financial world with some of the most garbage products that are out there. So I called up my buddy Brian, who is now an active duty captain, who used to be a financial advisor before he was in the military. And he was able to give me some insights on different products and the gotchas and how people get paid. And I said, hey, Brian, why don't you just come on the podcast and we'll do a show. So we ended up recording over 2 hours of content. And so I'm going to break this down into a couple part series. And the first part of the series is life insurance. So Brian and I connected the other day, recorded this. So without further ado, I will get on to the recording and I hope you guys enjoy. All right. So we've got Brian Brantley here. So Brian is currently serving as an active duty officer in the U.S. Army in the D.C. area. I know Brian from one of our PME courses we went through a couple of years ago. Brian was formerly a licensed financial advisor with experience with multiple Fortune 500 institutions prior to starting his military career. Brian holds a B.A. in finance from the University of Tennessee and also went on to get his MBA. And worked in the financial industry for a handful of years before the housing market crisis of 2008. After that, Brian convinced his wife to do a 3-year term in the Army, which was 12 years ago. So Brian continues to serve. Brian began his service as an enlisted soldier, married and expecting his first child, single family income, living off a junior enlisted paycheck at first. Now, Brian is now an officer, but he's been enlisted, now he's been an officer. And Brian's lived through many of the challenges that we all face and you all face in the military and you will continue facing daily. He is here to share some of his insights of both a former finance professional and a fellow soldier who's working to change the definition of the new average Joe. So what Brian's going to also provide is some behind the scenes baseball, inside baseball about how financial products work and some things to avoid and maybe some good alternatives for each. So he's here to give me some credibility with all his licenses he used to have. So if I miss anything, Brian, I'll turn it over to you.
Cool. No, that was plenty. Like I said, the best part of having those licenses was the knowledge. And now the best part of no longer holding those licenses is being able to say whatever I want and give you the opinion and that inside baseball that if I still held those licenses, I wouldn't be able to do today. And it also gives everyone here listening an opportunity to hear from someone who's been in the industry. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then I'm going to be completely transparent with you today on what I actually do with my money versus what your typical financial advisor might tell you to do based on what's going to pay them well, you know, what's easiest to sell. Tim, you and I have been talking money for, the past 7, 8, 9 years. Sometimes completely aligned, sometimes completely butting heads, which is actually more fun. But I think for what we're going to talk today, it's pretty straightforward, pretty basic, easy stuff. And it's that basic, easy stuff that really pushes you towards financial success. You know, when you get into the nitty gritty nuances, that's when, I think we can start debating, but we won't get there today.
So, yeah, sometimes we might oppose, but I think there's a couple of things we can agree on. And one of those is behavior drives your personal finance. The personal finance is largely behavior. And if I can keep you away or we can, kind of give a quick driving lesson on finances and the products out there. So the first topic we're going to cover, which, this is something that everyone has to have because people say you do because government says you do. And plus you can't afford certain losses. So we're going to cover insurance first. Now, insurance is something that transfers risk on losses that could bankrupt you. So You know, I have insurance on my car because if I go out and wreck my car and wreck someone else's car, I can't afford, or nor do I want that risk of having to replace everything and pay for medical bills and all that. So we're going to talk just overall about probably life insurance is probably one of the most important ones out there. So Brian, I'll turn it over to you. And
Sure. So yeah, like you said, you know, insurance isn't the first thing that comes to your mind when you talk about accumulating wealth. It's not sexy. And frankly, it brings up some, you know, less than pleasant conversations that you have to have with yourself and your loved ones, which is one of the primary reasons why people avoid doing it. But when I used to sit down with clients as a financial advisor, one of the first things I would do after getting an idea of both the client's financial situation and their goals is to see what they're doing right now to protect themselves. The number one cause of bankruptcy from people who are not completely fiscally irresponsible is either a lack of health insurance or a lack of quality health insurance. Medical bills can bankrupt you quick. Fortunately, for those of us in the Army, you know, TRICARE does an incredible job of protecting us from that liability. So life insurance tends to be that thing that we need to look beyond what the Army provides to actually get the kind of protection that we need. Tim, I've heard you say it. I like this rule of thumb. It's the 10 times your income rule. If you're a junior enlisted soldier and you max out your SGLI for $400,000, then yeah, you're pretty close to your 10 times your annual salary. But I'd like to go a little bit beyond that because a lot of people, when they find out how much life insurance I have, a lot of them raise some eyebrows. They think I'm overinsured. They're interested as to why you even went beyond the SGLI because $400,000 sounds like a ton of money. But the reason I have life insurance, Tim, is because I want my financial goals to outlive me in the circumstance in which I'm no longer around to fulfill them. So for a lot of people, 10 times your salary can do that. For me, you know, I'm dreaming big, Tim, and I need a little bit more than 10 times my income right now to do that. You know, some of the reasons, and when you look at this as a math problem, you know, income replacement. I am 12 years in the Army. If I work for 8 more years as of 2 days ago, I could retire and get that sweet, sweet pension. But if I don't retire in the next 8 years, if I were to die before that, my income stops. So I know that I at least want to get enough income to drive me towards, let's say, my retirement date. So I'm going to scratch that number down on a piece of paper, income times 10. My wife and I have some specific joint goals. And one of those is complete financial freedom. It's one of the stipulations we have if we retire in 8 years versus 10 years. And the way we define financial freedom is completely debt-free. And then our ability to not rely on a specific income source. So I want my house paid off. I want absolutely no car debt. We'll talk about all that later. Obviously no credit card debt, no personal loans, no student loans. I want to owe nobody nothing. Because when you do owe everybody everything, it's not very much fun. So that the price of what's left on my mortgage gets added to the number of income replacement. Retirement goals. You know, my wife, unlike myself, she wants to die at her desk one day at the, you know, ripe old age of 95. She wants to be a teacher. She's currently a nurse, wants to teach in nursing school. I want to die, you know, on the beach with a beer in my hand. Hopefully old, but you know, we'll see. But so we look at those retirement goals. What is my wife going to need income wise? And honestly, this is a cool thing, a little bit of a sidebar that a lot of people get trapped with when it comes time for retirement is the survival, the spouse benefit.
SPB, you're talking about?
The SPB.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know what that is, basically if the service member retires, if they do not have SPB and you know, you get your retirement certification and you go sit down on the beach with your beer and, you know, a plane crashes into you from out of nowhere and you die the next day, the bills are still coming, but your paycheck stops. The retirement dies with you. The SBB, the retirement is going to continue on for your spouse. usually at a degraded level, so about half. And you pay a pretty decent chunk of money to get that. I don't want to pay that chunk of money, so I'm trying to prepare ahead of time. And the way I'm doing that is through term life insurance. And we'll get into the difference between term and variable and whole in a moment, but I use term life insurance to cover me beyond the point to where our financial freedom is devoid of, or is no longer reliant on my pension check. So when we have a certain amount of money in our IRAs and our mutual funds, and we can draw off of that as income in retirement, and my pension is just, you know, sweetness on top, then I no longer need that survivor benefit. So I have an idea in my head, you know, it's my math problem of when I can achieve that. And I've got life insurance taking me to that point. So if all goes as planned, or even doesn't go quite as nice as planned, I'm going to be able to sign off and say, no, thank you. I want all of my retirement. I don't want the SBB. So if you plan ahead now and you use term life insurance to do that, it's something you can do. Education for the kids, huge cost of education these days. It's only going up. Maybe it's free later on. Maybe it's not. But, you know, right now, if I do have two kids, both of them are young and I'm saving for their college. If my income stops, then I want my life insurance to cover the cost of their education, because that's what I want to give to them. And then inheritance and giving. I kind of have an idea of being beyond a single generation of wealth. I want to build wealth that outlives me, that I can give. Right now, I'm getting there, man. I'm working hard, but I'm not at that point where, you know, my wealth can change my kids' lives. With my life insurance, I have about 1.9 million in life insurance, 400 of the SGLI, and 1.5 in term life insurance that's laddered, meaning I have multiple policies to get me to that number. That's enough that I think I can give my kids a life-changing head start at life. So you kind of add all that stuff up together, and that gives you that number that you need.
No, that was a perfect summary. So what Brian just really described is the need for life insurance, right? So do you need life insurance right now? And he covered, you know, income replacement, financial freedom, you know, to cover his debts, his retirement goals for him and his spouse, education for the kids, and then inheritance and giving beyond that. So kind of his legacy there. So he's setting himself up so that in the future, if something were to happen to him, you know, his family is going to keep on succeeding and they're going to be able to hit their goals. So the 10X rule, or 10 to 12 times rule, I'll call it the 10X rule for now, is a good place to start. I know I have that separately of my work benefit, you know, just because if something were to happen with my job and I got fired, or I decided to leave and go do something else, that I'm not reliant on whatever my work benefit is. So I also have like 1.5 on me outside of my work benefit. So, and then through work, I probably have another 4 or 5. I hope my wife's not listening to this episode right now. She might get some good ideas, but
I know I shut the door on purpose. Yeah.
So, so those are just some things to consider. You know, if you're single, and you don't have kids, you know, maybe you want some for your parents or whatever, or, you know, or you want to give to something after you die, you know, again, term life insurance is going to be the cheapest and most, I think, strategic option, just because of what's going to happen further on for you down the line. So now we're going to kind of dive into the different types of life insurance, kind of wave top level, the good and the bad of each.
Yeah, this is one of those good, bad, and ugly kind of situations here. You know, once you've kind of done that math and you know what you're looking for, and you go start talking to insurance providers, you're going to find three main types of insurance they're going to throw at you. And depending on what organization you are talking to, they're going to really push two of them over the one. And I'm here to tell you that, you know, having been in that position, having had to sell it, knowing what the paycheck difference is for me, I know why they push these, and I'm going to kind of give you the inside baseball here. So three types of life insurance, and there's all sorts of fun names for them, but these are the three types. You have term life insurance, you have whole life insurance, then you have variable whole life insurance. We'll just call it variable for now. Term is pretty easy. It's, I'll start off by telling you, it's what I absolutely recommend. It's what I have, Tim. It's what you have too. Basically what it says is I agree to pay a specific premium. You know, it's not an investment. but it's covering my butt in case something happens. Every single month for a set amount of time, 10, 20, 30 years is your typical term. That number is not going to change. Your premium is not going to change. And the death benefit is not going to change. It's incredibly cheap in comparison to whole life and variable life. It is best suited to cover temporary expenses or goals. Now, I want to say that one again, because this is important. It's best suited for temporary expenses and goals. And the reason my expenses and goals are temporary, Tim, is because I plan financially to eventually be self-insured, that I have enough money to accomplish my goals. And when I have that, I no longer need to pay this premium every month. But like I was talking before, right now I got these big dreams that I can't afford to pay the bill. So I'm working so hard to do that. This is my gap insurance in case I don't make it. It's so, so cheap. The younger you start getting into looking at prices, you're generally healthier, right? If you're in the military, then you're as healthy as, you know, you could possibly be, then it's going to be really cheap. My first policy I got when I was 25, and I pay about $19 a month. And that got me $750,000. And then at 35, I just looked at another $750,000 policy to kind of give you some perspective. That put me at right at $31 a month. And actually, I take that back. It was $38 a month for a 30-year. It was $31 for a 20-year. So if I were to do it as a younger man, then I'm going to pay a lot less every month and still be covered. And then if I do a 30 year now at 25, which is what I did when I hit 35, I do a 20 year, you know, when I'm at 45, maybe I look at a 10 year if I'm still not exactly where I need to be, but I'm planning on my net worth building up to the point where I don't need to do that. Term, definitely the way to go. Look for reputable, lenders too. You're going to get some places that offer you way cheaper premiums, but if it's a fly by night institution, you know, like, that might not outlive your life insurance policy, then you lose all your premiums. That all goes to waste. And in a horrific circumstance, you know, your spouse might not get the, or the, your survivors might not get the money that you thought they would get. So big institutions with longevity are the way to go. Personally, I went through USAA. I bank with USAA. They don't pay me for saying this, but I like their policies. They're pretty much where they were competitive with others like Prudential. They know I'm in the military, so they're not going to charge me an arm and a leg for doing like a dangerous job. So I feel like they're going to be around longer than I am.
Yeah, exactly. The dangerous job. While I was active duty and I was a pilot, I couldn't get a policy anywhere else without doing the aviation exclusion policy. So USAA mm-hmm. was able to hook me up with that. But now that I'm out of this now I'm out of the service, I canceled that policy and got a new one that was a little cheaper. But that's a nice thing with the term policies. You can cancel them when you don't need them anymore. If you want something different, you find a better price, you can just go ahead and cancel it.
Oh, absolutely. And there's absolutely no impact to you. No negative impact for canceling this. You don't lose any money. You're obviously not going to get your premiums back. But you know, you're not going to get your premiums back anywhere, but then, yeah, you just cancel and you start a new one and you're good to go. Really, really easy. A great, great umbrella. Now let me tell you the other things. And I liked these when I was a financial advisor because they got me much bigger paychecks and we really were, you pushed. If, for example, Tim, if I sold you $1 million life insurance policy, I'm typically going to get 1 month's premium from you as a paycheck. So if you're paying $30 a month, I'm going to make $30 off of your life insurance policy. That's not much. And it's a lot of work. Now, if I sold you a whole life insurance policy, on average, I'm going to make about $4,000 in my first year for the same amount of coverage. And I'm going to make about $400 every year after that. And that money doesn't come from my employer telling me I'm doing such a great job. It comes from you and all the fees that you're paying for this life insurance policy. All right, so whole life. It has the same death benefit. If you die, your spouse gets a certain amount of money or your survivor. It has a premium, which is way, way higher. You know, upwards of 10 to 20 to 30 times more than what you're gonna pay for term life insurance. But it has this sneaky little thing that tries to get dress this pig up, put some lipstick on it, and make it feel like it's an investment. And it's called the cash value of your life insurance policy. And there's some really slick, really cool projection spreadsheets for these policies that say, yes, you can get a term life insurance policy and you could pay $30 a month. But if you spend $400 a month to get half the coverage, that $400 is going to go and it's going to build wealth for you. It's going to be put aside and saved. You're going to get a decent return on it. And then at the end, there's this fun 100-year rule. If you live to be 100, then your cash value will be the same as your policy coverage. So if you have $1 million in policy or a death benefit, your cash value will now be $1 million and you can basically take it out.
So cash taxes on it. So you're talking about cash value and face value, correct?
Yeah. So the cash value is basically, think of it almost like an investment account, but then think of it as an investment account that works way worse than an actual investment account because the fees are way higher. The access to the money is much harder to get to. The ease of which your survivors can get that money is so much harder. If I die right now, my wife, I mean, if she didn't already have access to my investment accounts, my will says that it just goes to her. The life insurance doesn't work that way. They hold up the, here's your benefit, your death benefit of $100,000, because that's all you could afford to pay for $400 a month. And then here is the cash value of, it looks like y'all put $30,000 into this, but after fees, it's about $17,000. These are all arbitrary numbers I'm making up off the top of my head. But unless you've been in this thing for a significant amount of time, the fees eat away in the first 10 to 15 years, any gains you're going to make. And then they have to decide between the cash value and then this wonderful death benefit. So most of the time, what ends up happening is the people who pass away with this policy, the spouse just gets the death benefit and the company keeps the cash value. They don't give both. It's an either or situation. So unless you live to be 100 and you have equal amounts, then really you're building up cash value just for the organization to keep, which a good story is when I first started working, and I was working at a very large insurance company. You see their commercials during the Super Bowl. I raised my hand and I was like, well, wouldn't you make a lot more money just buying term life insurance and then investing the rest? And he's like, shut up. Go sell whole life insurance, man. I was like, oh, well, look at these charts. I have, slick, sexy charts too, that shows like mutual funds growing, average then was about 9%. They're like, yeah. But you don't have life insurance forever. And that's the catch. Whole life insurance lasts forever, man. And that's nice. It feels good right now. But I don't need life insurance forever. I plan on being self-insured, man. Like, I want to have enough wealth that I don't need it anymore. And if I use whole life insurance to do that, I'm going to give so much money to that institution. By the time that I try to cancel this life insurance policy, you're going to get hit with fee after fee after fee after fee. I was looking it up, just the inordinate number of different fees that are kind of hidden into these policies. It's just not worth it. And sometimes if you've had it long enough, it's one of those, like, it's cheaper to keep her. You hear some, unhappy couple saying it. You kind of get in a bad marriage with your whole life insurance policy and you got to keep it even though you hate it.
So one point I want to reiterate, because a lot of people don't believe me when I say it. Again, I'm just the behavior guy, financial coach. I was teaching my class to a big room of transitioning soldiers and they had their wives there with them. And one of the wives was a insurance policy, sales lady. And I said the part about, well, when you die, they absorb your cash value. And she's like, that's not true. But what I didn't know is what you just said, if it's, it's one or the other kind of thing. So could you just reiterate that point real quick for the folks listening?
Yeah. So you have this cash value, it's like a savings account. And then when you pass away, they go to your spouse and they say, here's the death benefit. And that's what you paid for. I want $100,000 of life, whole life insurance. And they say, here's $100,000. And here's this cash value for, let's say, 50. And they say, now we can give you the cash value or we can give you the death benefit. And now there's some things in between, but really it's going to come down to one of those. You can get a reduced cash value or a reduced cash value in all your benefit. You can, you know, some institutions will even allow you to take some of that cash value and maybe buy a slightly higher benefit, although that's pretty rare. You're really going to get one of the two, and you're going to get which one is higher. Now, and this is where, you know, smart ass, right out of college, me raised my hand and said, well, if I got term life insurance and I had a mutual fund, she would get both. And I, no. You don't want to think that way, because what if like you die at 30 years and a day? And at that point in my life, I was like, oh, you know what? That kind of makes sense. Because if I had a 30-year policy and I paid all these years, wouldn't it just suck to lose all those premiums? I'm going to lose all that money that I paid in. So yeah, maybe this whole life insurance thing's pretty good. No. I'm going to lose all that money anyway. Yeah. So it's one of those things that this cash value, it doesn't perform well. It gets eaten up by fees, and it's oftentimes used as like a collateral. They say, hey, if something happens in your life, you can borrow against it, much like borrowing against a life or like a IRA, your retirement. That's a terrible idea. So I feel like this product is specifically built for people who don't want to be financially free for the rest of their lives. They don't want to be self-insured, or they can't imagine them becoming self-insured. Now, I'm not saying this as a big wig, you know, New York banker who has an income that's sky high. You know, like I'm a soldier. I make a soldier's wage. Like, you know, I'm not in the top 1% of earners in this country, but I can totally see a time in my life in the next 10 years where I'm completely financially free and I don't need to have this insurance carry on forever. So for me, having an insurance, having an umbrella when I don't need it because I know it's going to be a sunny day or I'm going to be prepared on my own, don't need it. So don't be swayed by the scariness of a term life insurance policy unless you want to agree right now to never be financially free and always be reliant on that organization to protect you and to provide for your family financially.
So let's fast forward real quick. And let's say you have a whole life policy and you just retired at age 65. So now you're starting to pay attention to your finances for probably the first time. And all of a sudden you've got this big expense. So three or $400 a month that you don't need per se. Your kids are out of the house. Your house is probably paid off with a 30-year term or 30-year mortgage. So now this is just a big expense eating away. And a lot of people go to cash it out and they've paid so much money into this thing and they find out the cash value is nowhere near what they really expected. So that's often what I see, is people go to retire and they're like, oh, I don't need this policy anymore. But you know, it's cheaper to keep her. They continue paying into it most of the time, and that's a big line item in a retirement budget. It is huge.
Yeah. It's about the same size as like a cheaper car payment.
Yeah.
But at one of those things, you know, if you haven't set up steps, it's like that survivor benefit. If you wait till the last minute and you haven't been planning for this, then yeah, you're stuck, and you got to keep paying, and you keep paying, and you keep paying, and you keep paying. Whereas if you had a term life insurance policy, then, you know, you just stop paying for it and you walk away from really low fees. You know, if I pay this term life insurance policy for the next 20 years, the one that I just got, I'm only going to be spending, I think like $9,000 total is what I added up to be in today's dollars, yeah. Which means as my money grows, that 9,000 20 years from now is going to be a lot less impactful than the 9,000 right now. So if you want to cash out, give me my cash value, you're going to get hit with a laundry list of fees, early cancellation fees, administrative fees, processing fees. You're going to get hit with the big one is basically like if you're vested. So think about like investment. A lot of these places have like 3 or 5 year vestments on the money that you pay into it. Not all your money gets feed equally. The stuff you've just put in gets hit a lot harder. You're going to lose a huge chunk of your cash value if you take it out early, as opposed to you dying with it.
All right. So we've covered term. I think we've hit the whole life up on the bad part of whole life. So, what's the third kind of insurance that you're going to cover?
So then there's like this hybrid thing. It's called variable life insurance. It is also a whole life insurance, meaning that it's going to last as long as you keep paying. There's no fixed amount of time. The biggest difference between variable and whole life is you have a lot more control over how the money is invested. So you can actually invest it into the market how you want within a limit. I mean, a lot of these variable life insurance policies have, you know, 30 to 50 funds you can pick from. So, you know, that's kind of nice. It can outgrow a whole life insurance policy, but it's also a much higher risk. And then your actual, if your cash value shrinks, you either need to replenish it to keep your policy's death benefit the same, or you need to reduce your death benefit, which is kind of a scary thing. If you decide you want to, you know, invest it all in the GameStop, and then which you can't do, but if you wanted to do something really high risk, then you are going to potentially lose some of the death benefit that you had. But it works the same way. It is higher fee though. And it's higher fee than almost all respectable financial institutions that allow you to purchase mutual funds. And then there's the same list of massive expenses that go along with it. Sales fees, administrative fees, investment fees, surrender fees, policy loan interests. Like, it's overall, it kind of acts the same way as for someone who wants to micromanage their whole life insurance. Avoid both of those. Don't let the slick salesperson tell you that you need to be financially reliant on their organization to support your goals and dreams. You know, if you start doing what Tim is talking about, making these financially smart decisions early on, you're going to get to the point where you're self-insured. And so in the meantime, you get term life insurance. It's cheap. You keep paying it. Don't miss your payment. You miss your payment, they cancel your life insurance. You keep paying it, making it automatic. And then, you know, you're going to cover yourself and you're going to make sure that your financial goals outlive you.
And that wraps up this episode of Leading with Sense. Hope you guys learned something about life insurance, the different types of life insurance, and what kind you need and how much you might need. Tune in next time for an additional episode from this interview around topics of investing and debt. So until next time, this is Tim signing off with Leading with Sense.